Hello and welcome to the Chronicles of Ganesi, Curse of the Green Sea, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast about six adventurers who are trying to prevent the Realm Eater Amira from destroying the world. My name is Marshall Mendez, the DM of this adventure. Before we dive into episode 1, I wanted to give a somewhat brief synopsis of the story thus far and explain a few things about our world, Ganesi. Keeping it mostly brief, a prophecy foretold the events that are plaguing this region of the planet, the Green Sea, and the group is trying to circumvent it to save the world. The prophecy is as follows. The first sign of Amira's return is the primordial Kraken Go-Sea resurfacing. The second sign is the rising of the Blood Moons. The third sign is the return of the chaotic dragon Shamstahir to its rightful homeland in Old Draconia. The fourth sign is the return of the Kadori Orcs. Once the Kadori have returned to the realm of Ganesi, Amira will have grown strong enough to swallow the realm. The Valakai will descend to Ganesi, and together with the peoples of the world will attack Amira and her armies. They will lose, and after the realms are swallowed, Amira will lay an egg that will one day hatch to create another realm of life, thus repeating the cyclical kalpa of Amira. So far, the first two pieces of the prophecy have come to fruition. And now a brief recap. On the 15th of Atma, 3rd Era 531, our beloved group was robbed within the Grinning Goblin Tavern. Dara, Gavik, and Quill agreed to help a man by the name of Le Comte de Flanor to retrieve four precious gems, and with them, a chest of gold for themselves. Seeking a chance to retrieve their lost belongings, they set out at once. Tracking the thieves, known only as the Black Riders, the party of three found their way to Redford, where a portal opened in the sky, dropping out a very weakened and amnesiac Estiel. Together, they sought to retrieve his memories and to gather intel on the Black Rider, who they later learned was named Ginny. The group confronted her in the Prodigar district of Redford, but she was not quite what they expected. They were welcomed into her operation and taken directly to her as honored guests. Yes, there was protection surrounding the room via hidden crossbows, but it was a precautionary measure for the thief. She returned their belongings and bestowed a gift to Estiel for his help in healing her men. She revealed that a man named Stiggins had betrayed her on orders from Acordio, a dwarven crime boss from Meldrior, who had originally commissioned the Mark to steal the gems. The next morning saw Ginny being strangled by Yusuf, and the party quickly moved to aid their new, if untrusted, ally. A shot was fired down into Yusuf's arm, revealing Clushin atop the battlements, coming to rescue his old friend. Together, they smuggled her out of the city as Clushin picked up Stiggins' trail. The newly formed group followed the trail to an accursed forest, where the party was given various accoutrements from a dryad and ind for helping protect the sprites of the forest. Rosehaven was just up ahead, and all signs from the old barkeep pointed to Stiggins being still in the city. As they exited the fat chipmunk, they finally saw him. Before he could get away, magic was channeled to entangle Stiggins and restrain him. The group sought answers in the cellar of the fat chipmunk, and Stiggins eventually cracked as endarkened tentacles were summoned across the room, reminding him of Go-Sea, the primordial kraken that signaled the end of all things. He told them that he threw the gems into the river, and Dara quickly retrieved them. With the gems in hand, Lauren revealed himself as St. Christoph, a Valakai who was banished from the Valerium. Together, the group found the truth of the stones. They are the Time Stones. And they saw glimpses into alternate timelines. Christoph sought to help the party in different ways, giving Gavik his magical concealment tattoo and Estiel the resolve to control his powers without his mask. He warned the party that they must leave quickly, as the usurper gods would be quick to catch onto his scent and chase after him. They were hounded throughout the Darkwood forests by angels and nearly perished. Luckily, they met with rangers who stepped in to give shelter, making new allies and gaining new abilities. A Zeal, a dark-skinned elven man with white hair and red eyes, named Fallow, gave Clushin Sarkis, a snow leopard companion, to aid him on his journey, in return for giving the snow leopard the opportunity to see the world. As they left the forest, they encountered the Count descending from his griffin's cab. He invited them all back to his manor and doled out respective rewards, paying many times the price that he initially quoted them. Within his home, they met Jared, the Mazaku butler, and learned of their alternate selves' past with Lord Villemir von Cusack. In his original timeline, they had all adventured together and helped stop the Kadori orcs from emerging, thus delaying the prophecy. However, the party of his timeline sealed him away as well, whether by chance or by accident, and he was tortured and hunted for what seemed like hundreds of years within that realm. When he escaped, he sought to reunite with them and question why they had left him to his fate, but found himself thrown far into the past of another timeline. Fallow soon appeared on the doorstep, black eyes and shadow-covered bone wings. He had been overtaken by the dark Asimir spirit. They learned of an ability called Soul Split, an ability passed down to a rare few over the last thousands of years, and found Varn's bestiary. It was deciphered, showing that he had taken residence in Flanor. Quill learned of a strange artifact in Linaris, the western continent, which would allow a soul to be reborn, a potential answer for his quest at extending the lives of his people. That night, the Emerald Order was officially formed. The party teleported northeast to an ancient ruined temple of Villamir south of Flanor. They managed to find Varn and gain some answers before 2 weeks were passed in training, research, and seeking answers to the newly formed Order's own personal matters. In this time, Estiel nearly died to a Rimaraz, and the light Asimir spirit left him. When he awoke, the shadow dragon Tebbit Nezelray had taken residence in his soul, and used its own magic to heal and restore Estiel's abilities. Much was discovered and unpacked, and Varn revealed that he was dying. Gavik and Clushin offered a core and an activated core to save him, and soon surgery began. Outside, a mysterious man attacked the cave with a small pack of wolves, apparently hunting Quill. Just who had he managed to piss off during his 2 weeks in Verdia? Clushin, Dara, and Quill dispatched their foes quickly. Inside, the surgery seemed to fail many times before the activated core was placed into Varn's new heart. Estiel restored the body many times with nanites. His body twitched and began to glow before he changed shape repeatedly. The form finally settled on a shadowy outline of a man with emerald eyes. He spoke telepathically before transforming into Varn, but healthier and younger. His vocal cords were healed, his scars were gone. He closed his eyes and saw the truth. Villamir had betrayed them. He was responsible for many of the problems plaguing the group. He sought revenge on his former friends, unknowingly harming innocent strangers who did not know him. He did not know he was in another timeline. His guilt was immeasurable, and his journey thus far with the party was one of redemption. Varn revealed that Villamir is needed to seal away the Kidori, and without him, this cannot be successful. He asked if they would give Villamir the redemption he so desperately seeks, or condemn him and kill him at Journey's End. Quill expressed his conviction to stop his selfish pursuits to rescue his parents, and the gang showed him they were with him all the way. Dara, however, stepped back, finally finding another of their kind in the nearly 1,700 years they'd been alone. They had completed their quest, and the party understood. Many tears were shed as the sealborn druid said goodbye, and they all walked forward into the fateful night air. After the Order left Varn's hidden cave, with Quill's solemn vow to save his parents and his people, they witnessed what appeared to be a celestial object between the twin moons of Ganesi casting a cerise glow upon them. As the moons began to darken into a deeper red, they recognized this as the second piece of the prophecy, the Blood Moons. Shortly after it began, malevolence spread rampant throughout the Green Sea, preying on deeply negative emotions and transforming the more corrupt denizens of the world into what is now known as Ora Kora, the Malevolent Born. The Emerald Order sought Villamir for answers and, arriving at the Isle of Karth, they finally reconnected with Dara, who had been laying the structure for a new settlement for the resistance fighters against Slaver's Roost. Before laying siege, the group sought to find the Sigil of the Garuda in the lost city of Nizz, hoping that it could be used to bring the Garudan slavers to heel and usher in a new era of peace without violence. Instead, the sigil slipped through the grasp, and Quill was locked into combat with an Ora Kora known as Trelandriel. When the dust settled on their awesome and terrible duel, Quill lay broken beneath the rubble next to the corpse of his now malevolent free mother, Sylvia. The group bid farewell to Fallow and returned, limping but alive, to Karth. 20 days passed, and the siege of Slaver's Roost came upon them. Gathering in all of the favors Villamir could cash in, the Emerald Order assaulted the Roost with dozens of ships, dwarven mercenaries, and hundreds of foot soldiers composed mostly of freed slaves. They sought to kill Eldriagos, the third Archon of Amira, and entered into his realm, the Zugest, to fight him. They barely survived the battle that ensued. Upon his death, they purified much of the surrounding area. Garudan slavers who previously held spears dropped them as their minds returned, falling to their knees in horror at the things that they had done. Iki was given the sigil to lead his people until such a day that Quill returned. Dara became a cleric of the now purified god of nature and arcana, Naramis. The battleborn mercenaries supplied them with their largely broken craft, the Stratus Falcons. Finally, the Emerald Order arrived in Wallaka, the capital of Nerosa. They came seeking aid from the Lorekeeper. However, when they turned back to see if Gavik had stepped through the portal, they noticed that he had remained behind. Shortly after, Finn revealed that he was going home to rejoin his guild, the Ferrymen. That should catch us up to episode one. Now, let's take a few minutes to dive in the details about each of our titular characters. Aura Farnay, played by Coleman Winger. Just who is Aura Farnay? A couple descriptors would be devilishly handsome, a silver-tongued devil, and a fiendish right hook. The best is yet to come. It's a saying that he keeps close to home, literally having it tattooed on his chest. A reminder that as you walk down the path of life, the best possible outcome is always ahead of you. And if you ever feel like the best opportunities, your fairy tale endings, are behind you, then you have new paths to travel. Life isn't always easy for a Mazuku in a world where devils prey on people. Life especially isn't easy when you're a Mazuku born of a cult ritual on a sacred night for worshipping those devils. That's where this story began. He was orphaned as an infant, as his mother did not survive his birth, and he had no father to speak of, so life was difficult. He only had one friend to bond to. They kept each other out of trouble and had each other's backs, as the other members of their community did not. Life was all right until the Pirate Queen of Stahlbrook came and decided to quote-unquote liberate their small island settlement. Once that happened, they took to the seas, joining a small band of privateers, mercenaries, and bodyguards known as the Immortal Sons. They lived an exciting, rugged, and adventurous life until their luck eventually ran out. With an army on his heels, he made his way to the closest beach where he met the love of his life. They lived passionately for their short time together. She made it all okay, until Velina was torn from his arms and murdered. Aura Farnay also fell victim to the assault. The last thing he remembered was the blade falling upon his head, and then nothing. He woke up on the beach, but things were different. His right arm had been encased in black obsidian, and the entire right side of his head and horn the same. Some power was toying with his fate, and he needed answers. From there, he set off on a pilgrimage. The Dawnbringer would guide Aura Farnay to battles to the west, proving his honor, or would guide Aura Farnay to Velina, where they would spend the rest of eternity in each other's arms. Either result was just fine by him. The pilgrimage brought him knowledge of a siege against Slaver's Roost, a worthy test of Aura Farnay's strength, he thought. He saw the plan concocted by the Guild, the Emerald Order, and witnessed their backing by the Queen of Stahlbrook, the Torvalin Empire, and Lord Villamir von Cusack. After the siege, he sought them out to see if they would be willing to let him join him, to allow him to put his life on the line in the name of his god and his love. And maybe Aura Farnay can save the world from the Realm Eater while he's at it. No greater victory has been recorded. Velina and Uan Tu will look down on him with love and pride. The best is yet to come. Estiel de Taurus, played by Chase Ebeling. Estiel is a human male of medium size. He has shoulder-length black hair and the faint beginnings of a beard. Blue eyes, pale skin, and a slim athletic body. He wears leather armor and an intricate amulet around his neck. He grew up in a simple fishing village on the northern end of the Torvalin Empire. One day, he was confronted by one of the kids of the village, and Estiel lost control of himself and blacked out. When Estiel came to, she was nowhere to be found. They blamed him for her disappearance, and many of them looked at Estiel like he was some sort of demonic being. The elder of the village decreed that he should be exiled. As if by luck, fate, or intervention of a greater power, a cloaked woman who was passing through stepped forward and spoke with them. They stopped shouting, and his parents were looking back and forth between Estiel and this woman. A bright flash, and he was no longer in the center of town. Rather, he was standing in a lyceum. Nian began to teach him the ways of the arcane in this place. Then came the dreams. In these dreams, Estiel would see an angelic being who he later learned was Serafina. She guided him in controlling this unstable power. They made a mask that was enchanted to help aid him in this. He wore this mask and a hood to hide that he could use magic as a human. These days he finds himself making jewelry to pass the time. Estiel managed to make a name for himself in the Torvalin Empire and was commissioned to make an amulet for a baroness. After spending weeks making it, he thought it was far too good for her. Taking this item and bidding his mentor farewell, he set off for the Green Sea to see where his dreams and adventures would take him. From this point, he traveled to Alaka with a small group to secure passage to the Lore Keeper's Grove for information. Once in the grove, they received an audience with the Lore Keeper himself. After a short dialogue, they were led to a room that held the information that was sought. Evidently, the gods above didn't like what they had learned and decided to burn these books and attack the grove, causing panic. Quickly, they decided to use the teleportation room to leave the area since they were the target of the gods' wrath, hoping to draw them away from the innocent lives. Estiel, using his knowledge of the Lyceum, attempted to use that as the focus to prevent the party from ending up somewhere they didn't want to be. As if in a dream, he remembered the party setting forth to the Lyceum. However, in that same split second, the air around him cracked as if the fabric of space and time was being distorted. Upon coming to, he had lost almost all of his memories and found himself lying on top of a hobgoblin outside of an unknown city. After this short exchange, he decided to accompany this group. They had business in the city, so with some time of his own, he went to a temple of Lyana. Therein, he met with the head priestess, and she helped him unlock part of his memories. Enough for him to realize the things that didn't add up. He stayed with the group since they were the only ones that he considered safe. The journey led them to confronting a locally known thief known as Jinny, and for the sake of transparency and feeling like this person was worth his trust, he showed the group who he was. He removed his mask, causing a halo to appear and slight radiant radiation from his form, exposing his light Asimir nature. Because of this, Jinny decided to bestow a ring to him. Not sure of the nature, he decided to investigate it and found it to just be a mundane magical ring. After wearing it for a time, he noticed the being that only he could see. Eventually, he introduced himself as Kaz, the soul that had taken residence in the ring. Later, they found themselves outside the town of Flanor trying to track down Clushin's old friend Varn. After they found him, they heard that one of his associates were missing. Moving in haste, they went toward the location to find this being fighting a few snow wolves at a Rimaraz. The wolves they dispatched quickly. However, the Rimaraz managed to deal a crushing blow to Estiel and swallowed him whole. When this happened, the Light Asimir spirit abandoned his body and shattered his soul. He knew that there was another being within the ring besides Kaz. However, he did not know that this being was strong enough to reach through this connection and fill the void in his soul. Had this not happened, Estiel would have died that day. After some soul-searching, he found that this being was the ancient shadow dragon Tebbit Nezelre, a being that is both feared and respected. Estiel's body, being human, and with this new companion, he noticed that the magics he once had command over were replaced with something else, something more tenebrous. Clushin Trailbreaker, played by Addison Bell. Clushin is a Swarmkeeper ranger and designated tracker of the group. Clushin is a wood elf who grew up in another world and was thrown into Ganesi while adventuring. He has medium-length chestnut brown hair and fair skin with a slight copper hue. He stands tall for an elf, standing around 5'11". He's perpetually covered in swarming nature spirits that appear as various insects from the forest that he grew up in. A typical passerby would never know their presence, as he always wears a large cloak that appears to be woven from autumnal leaves that hides their presence. He met the rest of the party when called to aid a close friend, and he's been with them ever since. Clushin is the investigative type, seeking to understand this strange new world that he finds himself within. When he learned of Varn's bestiary being in this world, he grew more curious still, and together with Gavik deciphered the book and found out that he was currently living in Flanor. After reconnecting with his friend Varn from the Sword Coast, Clushin found himself investigating the disappearance of local snow elves and their connection to Anna Wilton, the estranged daughter of the legendary father of Magitek, Dr. Fenton Webb. While investigating his old research tower, Clushin learned the horrible truth. Dr. Webb and Anna Wilton had been draining the blood of elves to power the residual magic of amaranth crystals, the source of power for Magitek. Later, in the Cregane Mountains, Clushin and Dara met with a strange, glowing, rune-covered elk, who bestowed upon them an ancient scroll written in a language long forgotten to this world. Eventually, it was translated, revealing its contents to be from another world entirely, Oberyn, the original magical home of the humans. Clushin seeks to solve these mysteries, and many more in this world, and carve out a name for himself, and maybe, just maybe, a place to call home. Dara Mitteilt, played by Morgan Mendez. Dara is a druid cleric steelborn who appears about 30 in their tone and sound of voice. They have a trapezoid muscular body made of oak, wood, and metal. They do not have clothing except for a short cloak with a hood around their neck. They have small pockets built into their armor with a diamond left eye and an amber right eye. They are calm, gentle, and knowledgeable. Dara was shot through a portal in the age when humans arrived from the world of Oberyn to Ganesi, and they were impacted and put into a dormant sleep. When they awoke, the Kakara were traveling during the Light Mother's embrace, and found and named them Metal Oak on that day. Dara quickly realized that they were neither male nor female, and enjoyed being neither or both at the same time in their mannerisms. Dara also learned at this time that they had lost their memories. As they learned to do some magic as a druid, the Kakara taught them field biology, ecology, foraging, and gardening skills. They learned how to be in nature with the creatures as one of their own. As time passed, Dara outlived many of their friends. They understood all things go, but why they didn't puzzled them. They wandered and traveled looking for other Steelborn. This led to a deep loneliness and depression, and once more they fell into a dormant state, becoming one with nature. When they awoke in the Third Era, year 531, they traveled to Davenport to find an artificer. When they were resting at the Grinning Goblin Tavern, they met a man named Villamir along with Quill, Estiel, and Gavik. Villamir was robbed of precious objects, and Dara and their new affiliates agreed to help find these stolen goods, and it became their journey with the Emerald Order. This threw the group into working together when finding out that the Realm Eater Amira was going to destroy everything, so Dara knew that they had to work together to protect Ganesi. After a couple of months passed traveling to find the gods, they met another Steelborn named Zelos. They found purpose again working with Zelos, being comfortable in the present rather than obsessed with finding out about their past life. Living in the moment was truly healing for Dara. They began working to create a new haven for freed slaves and other Steelborn, recruiting and spreading the word of Amira's plan. Dara also found faith in the nature god Nerimus, becoming a cleric of the god that Estiel purified of malevolence. Zhao Jinhai, played by Jackson Childs. Jinhai is a creature that is fairly new to the Green Sea. He is an Imok, a recently sentient species of simian people from the continent of Venubia, specifically the Imerizian jungle. Every Imok once in their life is given a list of things to accomplish or do, and are sent out into the world until they complete this list. When they do so and return home, if they are deemed to have grown in their wisdom, they are given the title of Savma, and can become appointed to leaders across the world to help guide and shape them with a gentle hand. Jinhai, despite his hulking appearance, is actually a gentle soul. He tries defusing situations before they become hostile, but isn't afraid to fight if needed. He can be very careless, often accidentally breaking things or sticking his nose where it shouldn't belong. Mostly, he wants to attain the title of Savma in hopes of redeeming himself for the sins of his past. Quill Bernhardt, played by Avery Chandler. Quill is a Garuda from the Levine Tropics, tested by time and untouched by malevolence. He is a monk who could once bend and reshape the four elements, though since has lost an arm and began to look inward. After losing his arm, Quill began to study from a book known as the Six Circles of Gehelendar, a text largely deemed indecipherable, and has unlocked the beginning of a new path for himself, the way of the astral self. He is a purveyor and connoisseur of the culinary arts, and quotes himself as being famously humble. The attack on Slaver's Roost was led by Quill, Villamir, and Quill's father, Iki, and carried out by the Emerald Order. His people, the Garuda, were finally stopped, and slavery was ended in the Roost. The former slavers are now working together with Quill's father to rebuild their civilization and to redeem the name of their people by ending slavery across the Green Sea. Now Quill, the Emerald Phoenix, finds himself in celebration as the Emerald Order seeks answers from the Lorekeeper on the central island of the Green Sea, Nerosa. If you'd like to learn more about our world, you can find maps, lore, and more information at www.worldanvil.com/w/genessi-marssmendez. That's Ganesi-Mars-S-Mendez. And soon, you can download the Wayfarer's Guide to the Green Sea, the player-friendly version of this campaign setting. The World Anvil page is constantly being updated with new information and more detail. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Chron of Ganesi. That's Chronofgenessi. Keep an eye out, because soon we'll be on Patreon. You can listen to the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and any other platform of your choice. Simply look for Chronicles of Ganesi. New episodes will air each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time, except for the last Wednesday of the month. If you subscribe to our Patreon, the last Wednesday of the month is when we'll be uploading our bonus episodes, whether they be one-shots or a small contained story over a few sessions. If you subscribe to the lowest tier on Patreon, you can also listen to our show after the show, A Short Rest, where we chat about the recent episode and answer questions bi-weekly on Saturdays. I hope that you enjoyed this brief look into our world and our history. We look forward to sharing more with you each week to come.